Good morning, everybody. It is September 14th, 2021. This is your home away from homeroom, the ADK homeroom, your daily podcast. I am your host, the teacher in exile. I am Frank, and fighting through the haze this morning. Oh, I don't know if you can hear my tears. My dog is killing me, the flatulence out of this beast. I need a respirator in here. I need like 20 N99s making a cone on my face. This dog, man, she's a Newfoundland. She's 6 months old, 80 pounds. I got a kid who's 5 years old, 50 pounds. And this puppy, she just blocks my kid. She like body checks him like he's on skates, like Hulk smash. And the kid goes flying into fireplace. And the dog is farting on top of it. Oh my goodness. And now she's chasing the cat. Oh man. She's big enough to go outside now, at least the dog, not the cat. We already had one cat eaten by coyotes out here, or owls or something, right? We live in the middle of the Adirondacks. You got to be aware of that. I got bears in my driveway, eagles flying over my backyard. So at least it's good that this dog is big enough I can put her outside. I'm going to have to do that right now. And, you know, apparently, though, the bigger the dog, the more likely she is to tear a, that was the dog running through here, tear a hole in the fabric of space-time and open up a portal to the dimension of Uber farts. All right, let's get this dog out of here. Okay, I am back. We should be able to proceed now without the supposedly domesticated life here. It's a little bit more like wildlife impinging on us or impacting us here. Let's do the science fact of the day, as we are wont to do. Bad habits lead to late facts and in alone. A little bit of Ed Sheeran to kick us off here with the fact. All right. I guess today's science fact of the day has to be about farts. How can we do a science fact of the day about farts? Well, I'll tell you, we're going to do it two ways. The boring stuff first. Fart volume, that's about 500 to 1500 milliliters a day, half a liter to 1.5 liters, so a quarter to three quarters of a 2 liter soda bottle, if you're wondering. Most of it's just hydrogen gas, carbon dioxide, sometimes methane. That makes about 99% of it. The smell is not due to any of that, though. The smell is 1% of other trace gases, like hydrogen sulfide. And I have to point out, right, so I've been in the classroom for 25 years. People love to do a fart science fact of the day in the classroom. And I have to point out that there's an amazing study out there from 1998, F.L. Suarez, working out of the Minneapolis Veterans Affairs Medical Center, published a paper. No citation, sadly, apparently, but he did publish a paper where he tested a commercially available activated charcoal cushion that you put around your butt. It's called the Toot Trapper from Ultratech in Texas. I am not making this up. And it's supposed to cut down on the smelliness. And you have to go read this paper to see how F.L. Suarez did this. He literally, or she, I'm not sure, FL, literally duct taped Mylar pants to 16 volunteers' waists and thighs, had a catheter coming out, two judges who were blinded to this. They didn't know whether the volunteer was having the activated charcoal cushion, a placebo cushion, or no cushion at all. And you will be happy to know that Suarez et al., there were two other co-authors on this paper, found that the Toot Trapper works. P-value under 0.01. It works. The smelliness was reduced a lot, even though the physical barrier seems to be as much as the activated charcoal, because the placebo cushion was far above no cushion at all, too, in terms of reducing the smelliness. All right, but here's the interesting part to the science fact today. Actually, the first part usually makes people chuckle. The second part I find a little more interesting because I happen to love me some etymology. And it turns out that there is one element on the periodic table that is linguistically, if not chemically, related to farts. Do you want to guess what that element is? You could even sort of stretch it to two elements. Definitely one element. Got your guess? I will tell you the element that is at least linguistically, etymologically, even related to farts is nickel. It is nickel discovered or isolated by a Swede in 1754. And it turns out the word nickel comes from a German word, Kupfernickel, which meant copper-colored demon or goblin. So it's named after a goblin. And of course, what other nickel is there? Pumpernickel. That's right, pumpernickel. Pumpernickel is one of these words that has great etymology. There's an apocryphal story. It's not even apocryphal. It's just flat out made up. And this story says that the word pumpernickel comes from Napoleon, and Napoleon had a horse named Nicole. And Napoleon would hold out his hand with a crust or some crumbs of pumpernickel bread in it. And his horse Nicole really loved this bread. And Napoleon said, "Ooh, this bread is so good for my horse Nicole. It makes her so healthy. This bread is good for Nicole. It is bon pour Nicole. Bon pour Nicole. Good for Nicole." And of course, bon pour Nicole became pumpernickel. Unfortunately, or fortunately, since the real explanation is even better, unfortunately, that is not true. That's as made up as Audubon's etymology for the word saunter, where he said that, the Christian pilgrims were sauntering toward the Holy Land, and the Holy Land was Santerre, so Santerre became saunter. Yeah, that's made up. So is bon pour Nicole. The real story is that pumpernickel is from the German, and nickel means little goblin or demon, and pumper means farting. So the pumpernickel bread is farting goblin, farting demon, farting bastard. And of course, that's related to the element nickel. We have the same little goblin, the same little demon right there. The other element in the periodic table, by the way, that I said was sort of related to this, if you're interested, is cobalt, right? Cobalt is also a little German demon. It looks similar to nickel. And when they first found cobalt, a bunch of silver miners, also isolated first by a Swede, by the way, around 1733. And when they first found cobalt, it was as impurities in silver and other metals. And they thought that little demons, little goblins, the miners, and they thought that the little demons were putting these impurities into their silver. So they called this impurity, they called it goblin or demon. But it's a slightly different kind. It's not a nickel, it's a kobold. Dungeons and Dragons players, Warcraft players will certainly be familiar with kobolds as those monsters appear in those games. So yes, cobalt, named after a German goblin, German demon, and nickel, also named after that. And of course, pumpernickel, the bread, a farting demon, a farting goblin. Now let's go on to our regular format. We're going to do about 20 minutes of news and about 20 minutes of our deeper idea, seeing what is unseen in our opening series for our back half of the program and our deeper looks. And today it's going to be following up on metformin and looking at some more longevity treatments, talking about how good life could be, how great we could have things if only we were brave enough to see them, to embrace them, and to work toward them rather than being stuck in status quo. Which, sure, the status quo is a heck of a lot better than it was 100 years ago, a heck of a lot better than it was 200 years ago, but it's nothing compared to what could be should we choose to pursue it in another 100 years or another 200 years or even less, maybe just a decade. if we have the bravery to pursue it. I am thinking, I will say, I'm thinking a little bit about changing the format and just going to a single topic per day as I get into this. This is, well, I guess this is our sixth or seventh episode, but for a lot of podcasts, right, that would be 6 or 7 weeks, and we're doing this daily here. So still at the very dawn of our podcast journey together here out of the ADKs. So let me know if you feel like you would prefer a one topic per day format, or if you like the way that we've been doing it with multiple news and then a deeper dive in the second half of the show. So as I say, let's go to our first news item here. I love the ADKs, but how long can we stay? How much longer can we stay here in New York State? I am not sure. New York City vaccine mandates just went into effect yesterday. Love New York City, beautiful city. Woolworth Building, a temple to capitalism, of course. Just great architecture. Skyscrapers are inspiring, but now I'm not going there. I am fully vaccinated, but it's going the way of Australia. You have to be vaccinated now in New York City for indoor dining, movie theaters, gyms. Meanwhile, 50% of the police force, which is going to be supposedly enforcing these rules, 50% of the police force hasn't even had a single vaccine dose, let alone the full course. They're actually going to be paid to be tested now, pulled from patrol duty and paid. They're going to be tested while they're on duty because apparently the deal is if they're not vaxxed up, they have to be tested once a week. And that's going to be on the public dime now, of course. Also in New York City, non-vaxxed teachers must be offered non-classroom assignments if non-vaxxed teachers have medical or religious exemptions. This decision was handed down by an arbitrator late Friday night. Makes me wonder about my case a little bit, right? I have a medical exemption for masks. I'm fully vaccinated. The school had me fill out American Disabilities Act paperwork. All the lawyers signed off on it. I have three medical professionals signing off on it. I have a medical exemption that I can't wear a mask, an ADA, Americans with Disability Act exemption that I can't wear a mask, and my school district did not offer me a non-classroom assignment. Things that make you go, Yes, well, I can't believe it. There are economists, there are people out there who say that policy is like this, tax policy, people's decisions. Tax policy doesn't affect people's decisions on where to live. Not so much here. We are thinking about it. And now New York tax rates may reach over 60% with this new bill moving through the federal Congress down there in Washington, D.C. And the two words that makes me think of are "Bye, Felicia." But I will keep you updated. I will keep you updated. Next item in the news, right near us, but it's making national news right up here, kind of over between the Adirondacks and the Tug Hill Plateau, just north of the Tug Hill Plateau, Lowville. The nurses there quit rather than be vaccinated at the Lewis County General Hospital. And so they are closing down their maternity ward. They're not going to be delivering babies as of September 25th. And it is Lowville. I'm sure a lot of people reading this news item across the country are pronouncing it Lowville, but it is Lowville. There are many such strange pronunciations up here in northern New York, like Teresa over by Lowville. That is not pronounced Teresa, that's Theresa, and many other places like that. It's not Madrid, it's Madrid. Anyway. So that's how things go in upstate New York, and I've also lived in rural northern lower Michigan. And in small towns, people rely on each other. These nurses, rather than be vaccinated, they're just quitting. And they could have up to 30 other people, 30 other nurses and techs in that hospital quitting too, which may impact other departments there. In a small town, guys, that's how it goes. We rely on each other. They're not scared of quitting. It's like that Hank Jr. song, right? A country boy can survive. You're in a small town, your car breaks down. You don't call AAA, you call your uncle. In a small town, this happens all the time here. We're out to eat. Our little kids are making noise. They're running around. You know what happens? The waitress takes them over by the bar and plays with them at the pool table. Give you a chance to eat because you know the waitress and she knows your kids. It's fantastic, frankly. It's awesome. We're in a small town. The FedEx guy sees us down on Main Street. He just stops. He gets out. He hands us our package on Main Street and he keeps going on. Saves him a trip. It's convenient for us. I freaking love a small town. It is fantastic. Yes, yeah, so nurses aren't afraid to quit. They got their people. And like that Hank Jr. song, you know, they're gonna survive. Country boys can survive. Personally, right? I think the adults should be vaccinated. I advocate for it. I'm fully vaccinated. But as far as standing up for your rights, I think we need to see a whole hell of a lot more of people saying, no, it is not okay for you to seize me and inject chemicals into my body. Right? I'm out from school because people are abusing kids with these masks, taking away proms and plays and concerts and performances and teams and labs and field trips. These kids, I think people outside the school system, or if you don't have a kid who is affected, because some kids aren't affected, but if you're outside the school system or if you don't have a kid who's affected, I think you're missing it. But remember, at my school, for example, I know. And I haven't seen every school. I know that in Texas they had a study that attempted suicide rates among girls are up 50% there. And in my school, hospitalizations for attempted suicide rate are running at 240% above the average the year before the pandemic started, compared to the national average. And we're also like 60% above people who form a plan to have suicidal ideation. So it's bad out there. These kids are hurting. But people go along with it. You know, it's hard to be a stand-up guy in a sit-down world, I suppose. Number three on the news item list today. Didn't talk about this yesterday, but oh my gosh, Joe Biden, did you see his conference with tornadoes talking to people about in New Jersey about the storms that they're having, and he's at this conference and he says, "Oh, so you know, you see those tornadoes, but they don't call them that anymore." What? Who doesn't call them tornadoes anymore? Who doesn't? What do you call them? Twisters? Because that movie came out a long time ago. Very disappointing. Stevie Nicks track on that soundtrack, by the way. Love Stevie Nicks. I'd pay to hear her sing Happy Birthday. But that wasn't my favorite song on there. Biden has no clue what he's talking about. Tornadoes, they don't call them that anymore. And then he has no clue, apparently, about geography, because in the very next half of a sentence, his next clause, he talks about Iowa and Nevada being in the middle of the country. Well, you got one out of two. So I guess with today's standards, you'd probably pass, right? The New York State and his history of plagiarism, right? He knows all about doing whatever he needs to do to pass. So, and New York State, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but the state math test for algebra and for algebra two, you need a raw score of about 30%. Sometimes it's 32%, 33%, sometimes it's even lower, to pass. A raw score of about 30%. A lot of people don't know that because the state always rounds up your scores and people see the curved scores reported. But the raw score is about 30% to pass algebra and algebra two in the New York State Regents exams. And I guess Biden's shooting for that because one out of two in the middle of the country, right? Nevada is not in the country. I don't care if you live in California. I don't care if you live in New York and you think everything in the middle is flyover country and you just lump it all together. Look at a map. Look at a map. Open up some sort of geography program. Nevada is not in the middle. And then it got worse for Biden too. He's talking about the wetlands in Iowa and Nevada. Ooh, wetlands are not what I think of when I think of Nevada, right? I was on a honeymoon in Vegas. I don't gamble, but that is a fun town. That is a fun town. And it is just a bunch of buildings out in the desert. Nevada is a desert. I've been up to Reno. I've been everywhere, man. I've been to several places in Nevada. That is a desert. That is not a wetlands. Very, very interesting. And then again, yesterday, Biden was cut off in the middle of a different news conference. He was talking in Idaho with people about wildfires, and he's about to ask these wildfire people questions, and he says, "Well, one of the things that I've been working on with some others is," and then the White House cut the feed. The White House cut the feed, and it just went to a blue screen that said, "Thank you for joining." The ASL translator disappeared, the audio disappeared, everything disappeared. I hope that someone who's at that meeting tells us what Biden was about to say, but I don't think that'll happen, of course, because CNN, NBC, ABC, I checked their websites. I can't find a single reference to any of these horrific statements from Biden. Horrific might be a bit overstating it, but they're troubling. They're concerning. They raise up questions of the big A, right? Maybe it's not the scarlet A, but it's the silver A, the gray A. It sure does make you go, Guess that's our theme for today. And of course, Biden's been cut off twice more in the last 6 months in similar circumstances, too. Let's go to our fourth item on the list. Fast one here today. Tyler Cowen doing another public service yesterday, posting about why he doesn't want his kids to go to preschool. Well, actually, I don't know if Tyler has kids, but why he is against preschool. He cites an Italian study. Looks like a pretty decent Italian study, too, and a couple other studies. The Italian study quantifies at a 0.5% IQ drop for an additional month in preschool. That seems like a lot, but it's a public preschool that they're studying, and kids can certainly get lost in public preschool. The state is doing all kinds of things to take over parenting, and it's worse than for girls than boys, by the way, in that study. And here's how the state does it, right? They say, "Oh, you're not responsible for your kids growing up clueless. That's the state's responsibility. Oh, you shouldn't feel bad that your kid is 7 years old and he doesn't know his alphabet. That's the state's responsibility. You shouldn't feel bad that your kid is 4 years old and all he's ever learned how to do is turn on Netflix and stuff his face with Lunchables. You shouldn't feel bad. That's not your responsibility. That's the state's responsibility." So the psychology at work here is that the state absolves people of their guilt for being bad parents. And then people are like, "Yeah, that's great." But then, of course, what comes along with that is that the state, very Spider-Man-like, with responsibility comes power. And the state then says, "Oh, yeah, well, if we're responsible, and we are responsible, make no mistake, then you need to give us the power to do something about it." And then the state picks up power that way. And they've been doing it successfully all across the Western world for the last several decades, taking over early childhood in just that manner. This is also interesting, of course, though, because the Flynn effect does exist. The Flynn effect is well documented. This is the average rise in IQ throughout the 20th century across pretty much all populations. And for the Flynn effect to exist, even though preschool enrollment, if we're going to believe this Bologna study, for the Flynn effect to exist probably means that the Flynn effect could be even bigger if it weren't for this countervailing tendency or this countervailing preschool result, right? Makes you wonder. Speaking of wondering now, let's go to our E. Paul Torrance flexibility quiz. We didn't have a quiz yesterday. Let's do one today. September, right, is the seventh month. Well, really, it's the ninth month, but why is October Oct? Why is November Nov? Why is September Sept? Well, because they were the seventh and eighth and ninth months until some bright folks, some eager beavers, got the idea to insert July and August into our calendar. to honor, I guess, Julius Augustus Caesar down there. So he messed up our whole numbering system for our calendar. But what the heck? September is, in some sense, etymologically, at least the seventh month. So let's go ahead and do it. Our flexibility cue for today is the number seven. Remember, E. Paul Torrance, a great scholar of creativity, and he said one of the ways to practice it, one of the ways to buff up your creativity skills is to be flexible and think about the number of different ways that you could use a single word, for example, or a single idea or a single tool. And in podcasts, our tools are words, right? That is all we have, almost all we have. So, for example, if I give you the word buffet and then I say TV Western, you say Bonanza because Bonanza is also the name of a buffet restaurant here in America. Or I could say, if it's Buffett, I could say Finn's and you would say Jimmy Buffett because you're, of course, cultured and you recognize that Jimmy Buffett is one of the greatest singer-songwriters of the 20th century. And yes, that is a hill I will die on. And as I always say, if you don't believe me, take it from Bob Dylan, because he said the same thing. All right, here we go. Today the theme is seven. Your common word is seven. We're going to be flexible around the word seven. Your first clue is Peggy and Al. Yes, that's right. Seven Bundy. He was that kid pulling a Cousin Oliver in the seventh season of Married with Children. They brought in the cute little guy to try to save the ratings. I believe he was played by Shane Sweet. Seven Bundy. Psycho Dad. Sometimes I feel like Psycho Dad around here. Okay. Our clue is seven. Our next one, number two, is Elmer Bernstein. Yes, the Magnificent Seven. He wrote the theme to the Magnificent Seven. And every time I try to recall the Magnificent Seven theme song, I always end up thinking of the National Geographic fanfare, right? Da 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 da. And that's because Bernstein wrote both of those, right? Bernstein, the other Bernstein of the 20th century, he wrote so many great things. He also did the To Kill a Mockingbird theme. He did Meatballs, the wonderful Meatballs soundtrack. Go listen to that if you haven't. He even did like some of the vocal tracks on there, like Moondust, which is amazing. Number three clue, seven is our common theme today. We're being flexible around seven, and your number three clue is Aeschylus. Seven Against Thebes. That is correct. The play from rather early in the golden age of Greek drama, Seven Against Thebes. Polynices and Eteocles, some brothers throwing down, going at it over the seven gates of Thebes there. Seven Against Thebes from Aeschylus. That, by the way, features brain-eating Tityus, also seen in what video game? Assassin's Creed Odyssey. You can learn a lot from video games, folks. You can learn a lot from anything. Just pay attention. We're being flexible around seven. Here we go. Your fourth clue, Michael Gabriel Raphael. Okay, that one was probably kind of easy. Seven archangels mentioned in the Bible. Well, there are seven angels that stood at the foot of the Lord described in the Bible, but those are the only three who are named. Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael in the Christian Bible. Those are the three archangels who get names out of the seven. And our last clue, clue five, four, seven, 343. Yes, the cube root of 343 is 7. Cube root of 343 is 7. I think you probably got that. I threw that in there because one of our other great small town activities up here is trivia night. Everybody loves trivia night. We all get together and compete in trivia, but they never do. They've changed a little bit because I complained, right? In a small town, people listen to each other. They have changed a little bit recently. They try to get a little bit more math, a little bit more science in there. But largely, it's questions about bands, local history from the 70s and the 80s, and books and Oprah's book club. And some music, some pop music, I guess. But by pop music, we're talking like Lana Del Rey, stuff like that. All right, number six, last news item of the day here. Luis Elizondo coming out with a new book from HarperCollins. We always try to end with something good, something happy. And this is great news that Elizondo is coming out. Elizondo, of course, has done the world a service by blowing the lid off of the Pentagon's UFO program. He has, it's ATIP, at least it was when he was there, and he has told basically anybody who will listen, he'll go on pretty much any podcast. I should try to have him on here. He'll probably come on. He seems to go on any podcast. He's been telling people for years about what's going on there, done a great service. Some of his stuff, I will say, seems like he might be going a little bit beyond what he's actually seen and what he's documented, which is important, and what has been documented, I should say, and that he has seen, and venturing maybe a little bit into the area of conjecture. He also seems a little bit too trusting sometimes. He has not disavowed Bob Lazar, for example, who clearly knows nothing about conventional physics, and yet he claims to know about conventional physics. So Bob Lazar, just not credible. And I would love to see Elizondo disavow Lazar and people like that. Still, though, Elizondo's done a great service for us by dragging UFOs into the realm of science, taking the taboo away from it. Kind of like Heinlein and Asimov and Clark, right, brought science fiction out of the literary ghetto in the middle of the 20th century. He sort of brought ufology out of the academic ghetto, which is great, right? Avi Loeb taking things and running with them at Harvard. So good job, Elizondo, and I'm glad you are getting paid with your HarperCollins book deal. Good job to you. I guess one other note I want to be clear about. Yesterday when I was talking about the Hugo Award, and I was talking about one out of 18 of the last Hugo Award nominees have been male, and at the start, three out of the 33 had been female. I wasn't trying to imply it by any stretch of the imagination that it was a bad thing that females are writing great science fiction. One of the very first Hugo Award winners I read was Kate Wilhelm's Where Late the Sweet Bird Sang, right? Great Shakespearean sonnet. She's mining for her title there. I love this stuff. This is great. Ursula K. Le Guin got tons of recognition. Lee Brackett, I think, was the very first female nominated for a Hugo Award. Lee Brackett, of course, gets some writing credits on Empire Strikes Back, among other things. So I wasn't saying that at all. I was just pointing out that the 118th result nowadays is even worse than the bad 1 out of 10 female rate in the beginning of the Hugo Awards. So in the 1950s and 60s, as bad as it was being male-dominated then, and it was bad then, in the 1950s and 60s, you only had 3 out of 33 being female. That was bad. That was not what we want to see. But even that was about a 1 out of 10, 1 out of 11 ratio. And we're almost twice as bad now in the other direction. So we're against bias of all sorts. Bias against men, bias against women. And is it necessarily bias? Not necessarily. Could just be turning out this way. But the numbers do make you go, And especially if you're one of these people who think that discrimination bias is based only on results rather than anything actual. If you're only looking at results, equity of outcome, rather than actual equity and fairness in process, if you're only looking at equity of results, then golly, yes, way worse now than it was even when it was bad when it started in the 1950s. Now let's move to the second half of our program here. Let's look at longevity. The reason we're looking at longevity again is because many people think we're stuck in this spot where life is great and it's just not going to get better than this. A lot of people think that life is getting worse. They ignore the fact that if they wanted to, newspapers could have been printing good news every day. Every day for the last 50 years, newspapers could have printed a headline, 50,000 people lifted out of abject poverty today. But the newspapers don't print those headlines. People don't see those headlines. People are not aware of that. And a lot of people think that our world is getting worse. A lot of people believe that. So I'm trying to show here in the second half of the program over the start of the podcast series here, just our first six episodes, trying to show that we don't have to settle for this, right? We can be Sarah Jessica Parker's character, Carrie. I never watched that show, but it wasn't her big thing to not settle for anything. She wanted to wait for Mr. Big or something like that. I don't know. I never watched Sex and the City. I couldn't watch that. But I believe that that was her thing, is that she was never settling. And to some extent, or to a great extent, that's good. You don't want to settle, and we shouldn't settle for Netflix and Xboxes and GTA 5. As amazing as modern life is, it could be much better. So we have to see what is unseen here. Let's talk about longevity and living a lot longer. Old age is a disease. And over the last 15 years, people are starting to realize that and starting to realize you don't have to get old and decrepit. You don't have to have wrinkles. You don't have to age into this twilight period. You don't have to go to this place where you're going to rage against the dying light, as of course Dylan Thomas would say. So, metformin yesterday, N equals 3,000. 3,000 people enrolled in this trial across 14 sites. Phase three trials going on right now, all-cause mortality down in people who take metformin, including in early returns COVID. It's an old diabetes drug. So we'll see what comes with that. Let's look at some other things today that could be working against this horrible, horrible killer, old age. And not just killer, but it sucks the quality of your life. I'm old. I can't run like I used to. It hurts. Getting old sucks. So here's a quote from Richard Miller. Richard Miller is the, what is his title here? He's the director of the Glenn Center for Aging Research and professor of pathology at the University of Michigan Medical School. Go blue. Oof, I spent way too much time. University of Michigan emergency room when I was at school there. I went to school for physics, by the way, if you are curious. Got my undergrad degree in physics from University of Michigan's LSNA, Literature, Science, and Arts. That's like their main school. So here's a quote from Richard Miller. He says, "People assume aging is immutable," channeling John Milton, maybe. People assume aging is immutable and that it is a fool's errand to look for drugs that slow the aging process, but they are wrong. We have documented four different drugs that work in mice to decelerate aging and postpone the diseases and disabilities which make aging troublesome." So let's discuss what are these four drugs. They have combined to lengthen the healthy lifespan, or in different cases, I should say, not necessarily combined. In different cases, we're talking the average length of healthy lifespan of mice increased 15 to 25%, right? So 15 to 25% of a human, let's just say 73 years. We're talking 11 to 18 extra years of young, healthy life. Is that worth it? Is this a good thing to be pursuing? Well, in the immortal words of Adam and Maroon 5 in their song Sugar, yes, please. All right, it is definitely worth it. Give me some of that. I will have what she is having, please. 11 to 18 extra years of healthy young life. If you don't want that, then I'm sorry. You are maybe having a horrible life, or else you're living for the afterlife. And hey, if that's your thing, you do you. But as for me, 11 to 18 extra years of healthy young life, I loves it. So, what are these four drugs? Well, number one is rapamycin. Again, I just read all this stuff. Apologies if I am pronouncing it incorrectly. Maybe it's rapamycin, but then it sounds like I'm a Celebrity Jeopardy contestant trying to translate therapists as the rapist just to annoy Trebek. So I think it's probably rapamycin. And this, how does this work? Well, it slows aging by inhibiting this protein called mTOR, which regulates the process of protein production in cells, and inhibiting it allows cells to have time to sort of recycle damaged proteins, get them out of there, instead of allowing those damaged proteins to build up and gum up the cellular works. Is rapamycin healthy for people over a long time? Well, we're not sure. Safe for healthy people, but it sure seems safe for sick people because it is a repurposed drug. It has been being prescribed for a long time now, and those people seem to do just fine with it. And one published study, for example, has elderly people receiving rapamycin, and just for a couple of weeks they received rapamycin, and they already had measurably better, significantly better vaccine responses to a flu shot. They've also done studies here with dogs with rapamycin, with human volunteers, and they're studying, it seems to be the case that not only does it increase, have anti-aging properties, but it's staving off some diabetes, cancer. It's, again, it's kind of like metformin from yesterday, all-cause mortality. People do seem to be doing much better with this. So great. That's a great, great result, rapamycin. Second drug is Acarbose. And this is used in other country for other countries for diabetes, but our FDA is failing us, not used as much here. And this one slows down the conversion of starches into sugars. It slows down how fast your blood sugar levels rise after a meal, which is interesting. And again, huge increase and a sex difference increase in healthy lifespan among mice, 22% versus 5%. Still, you know what? I'd take 5% healthy young lifespan increase. 5% is better than no percent. Number three is actually a variant of estrogen. It's 17-alpha estradiol, and it's been shown to lengthen the lifespan of male mice by 15 to 18%. Unfortunately, no similar effect on female mice. The fourth drug in this amazing University of Michigan, Go Blue Wolverines, the fourth drug is metformin. And we already discussed metformin yesterday, so I won't get into that. Now, those are all repurposed drugs, right? They're drugs that have been out there. They're drugs that have been used for other things, a lot of diabetic treatment there. And the results have been fantastic. That's one of the reasons why they're in these anti-aging studies now, is because people were looking at them and saying, what the heck? We're having some great all-cause mortality reductions here from people on these drugs. Let's see if it stands up. And maybe it won't, right? These things are still in studies. There have been other panaceas, other great advances that people got all excited about that never panned out, right? So don't get your hopes up yet. But those are all repurposed drugs. Let's look at some other things. There are other specific senolytic drugs, right, that attack old senescent cells. Remember, as I was saying yesterday, one of the problems with aging is that senescent cells, some cells naturally get old and die, or all cells naturally get old and die, but as cells get older and die, they don't just poof. The senescent cell, it dies, it stays around, and it causes problems for other cells. It makes things less efficient in your metabolism, and so it would be great. And then it snowballs, right? The aging gets worse, and the aging gets worse, and the aging gets worse as these things build up and build up and build up, and it snowballs. So it would be great to be able to break apart and clear out and get rid of, eliminate these senescent cells. And there are some senolytic drugs now, dasatinib, navitoclax, quercetin, and fisetin are some of these. And they all seem to do something of a job at killing senescent cells and clearing them out. we're still in the beginning stages. We're still studying these things. Remember, people didn't really start taking a lot of these anti-aging sciences, biogerontology science, seriously until about 10 or 12 years ago. That's a shame for those of us who are already 50 years old. But hey, maybe it's good for my kids. We'll see. Or maybe it'll be good for me. People like Aubrey de Grey out there are saying that they think the first person who will be 1,000 years old is already alive. And of course, Greg Bear, I think like 30 years ago, was saying he thought that the first person who would live, I think, a couple centuries was alive at that point. But I think they were thinking more along the lines of scientific advancement on the pace of 1909 to 1969 than the pace of scientific advancement that we have had since 1969. Sometime we'll talk about that and how things have slowed down since then. And some people are claiming that things are speeding up again. I'm not sure I'm buying that. But we have a couple other categories of drugs here to discuss, or treatments to discuss. Drugs that target telomeres, and they protect telomeres. One of the great ones, promising ones here is the telomerase activator TA65. So it activates this enzyme telomerase, and that protects your telomeres. Telomeres, in turn, are these caps on the end of your chromosomes that protect the chromosomes from damage. And when the cell divides, as the cell goes through its life cycles, cell gets older and older, telomeres wear down. Yesterday, I quoted Urkel there. I'm going to do it again. I'm wearing you down, Laura. I am wearing you down. So yeah, that's what happens. I'm sorry, I can't resist, right? Great show, great show. So this enzyme activator TA65 is in a giant trial right now. The name of this trial is TACTIC, TACTIC. It's another acronym. I really wish people wouldn't fall back on acronyms. Just name yourself something, right? Look up some allusion. Try to have some good name. Acronyms are lazy and lame. Anyway, the TACTIC trial, hopefully they're better at medical science than they are at naming things. That's going on right now. I believe it started in 2020, seeing how this activator TA65 is going to do specifically when used specifically to target and protect the telomeres and lengthen lifespan. Let's hope for good results there. And then, of course, gene therapy, right? With CRISPR-Cas9, there is a gene called Cat7. And if you have a deficiency there, it seems to lengthen your lifespan. And you can directly produce that with some gene therapy using our amazing CRISPR techniques. The people who invented CRISPR, of course, just won the Nobel Prize, what was it, 2 years ago? Very well deserved for that. So I think I've made my point here, and that is that aging is a disease that can be cured as long as you see it as such. For what, maybe 6,000 years of recorded human history, nobody saw it as that. They just saw it as a fact of life. It was unseen. Now that we're seeing age as a disease, old age as a disease, we're working on progress to cure it. And we have several promising leads, very promising. So, you might not have to feel these aches and creaks. You might not have to age like we are. Time that renews the tissues of my frame, and that's how Edna St. Vincent Millay put it. Time might become our ally, which would be a wonderful thing. We can get rid of some of the ravages of time and focus on only the benefits. So, I'm 50. My daughter's 11. I'll be a little bit lucky to see her 50th birthday. My sons are even younger. But with these drugs, maybe you could see more of your children's lives. This is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful fate, a paradise much to be sought. You might even stay long enough, alive long enough to see the Lions win a Super Bowl. Who knows? So we're going to end with a very appropriate poem for one of the things that we were talking about today in our news segment, namely our President Joe Biden and his struggles with the silver A, the gray A, holding it all together. This poem, of course, you could probably guess what I'm going to read for you here. It's England in 1819 by Shelley, talking about King George III. Here we go. England in 1819. An old, mad, blind, despised, and dying king. Princes, the dregs of their dull race, who flow through public scorn, mud from a muddy spring. Rulers who neither see nor feel nor know, but leech-like to their fainting country cling till they drop, blind in blood, without a blow. A people starved and stabbed in the untilled field, an army whom liberticide and prey makes as a two-edged sword to all who wield. Golden and sanguine laws which tempt and slay, religion Christless, godless, a book sealed, a senate, time's worst statute, unrepealed, are graves from which a glorious phantom may burst to illumine our tempestuous day. All right. Great words from Shelley right there. Have a super day. I will see you tomorrow. Take care.